going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Get comfortable being uncomfortable.
It's time for Ben's Vision.
Our mission starting this spring is to win and to win now.
Projecting how the Bears roster will take shape under new head coach Ben Johnson.
Ben's vision is going to be principle.
These are the type of players that I need. That's the vision.
If it doesn't fit Ben's vision, are you willing to move on from certain guys?
Really enjoy hearing Ben's vision.
Current roster, free agents, and the draft.
Our entire organization's fired up about Ben Johnson and his vision for winning football.
Ben's vision.
This offense will be calibrated with Caleb in mind. This is not simply a dropping of a previous playbook down on the table and starting there. Nope, we're ripping this thing down to the studs and we're going to build it up with him first and foremost and then with the pieces around him next.
With Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Ben's vision. It takes a big spotlight today after the Bears have completed their draft. Just like everyone else, they aren't the only ones that completed their draft, but they were. It's the Spiegel and Holmes show here with you until 6 o'clock. There's a lot to break down because this very much felt like Ben having his hands all in, and his coaching staff too. And his coaching staff having a lot of hands inside of all of this.
You know what's interesting is this concept of us doing this segment was born just a couple of days after his introductory press conference. And we talked about it first in terms of, well, he's just going to get all these pieces and it's going to be just like what he did in Detroit. And then we're like, well, wait a minute. It's not going to be the same playbook. And we played the clip that's there in the open about how we're going to tear the offense down to the studs and build it back up. And then we ended up adding a caveat about how he's not building the same exact offense, but personnel, after 3 years of him as the visionary, is extremely relevant. And now he's the one who brings it all the way back to, here's my Detroit piece here, and here's my Detroit piece there. And it's a little unsettling to you.
I'm trying to figure out if it's good or bad. I don't know. It might be good considering the type of success that he had. But I did notice, like, there was that... that theme didn't stop, like, in the weekend. Obviously, the Colston Loveland thing. And we'll get to that in a second. But it was Luther Burden, too. He's like, oh, you know, he went to high school with Jameson Williams. And they're kind of alike.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
As soon as Burden got picked, I tweeted, oh, he got his Laporta, now he got his Jameson Williams. And people were like, wait a minute, I thought you said he wasn't doing that, blah, 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 blah.
It seemed like all the coaches got their guys, too.
God, Randall L. was so thrilled when they got Luther Burden.
Right. And then with Shamar Turner, that seemed to be a DA pick. The Roschar, the Trapillo seemed to be a Roschar pick on how Poles was talking about how they think they can help his bend because he's 6'8" and he's going to have to get lower to be able to play the position that he's supposed to play. Mm. Then, I don't know if you caught this, but with Zach Frazier, they were talking about how Al Harris was like, oh, no, he identified him a couple months ago and was like, we should be able to get that guy in the fourth or the fifth round.
I did catch that. You're right. Now, they love the coaching staff and they grabbed all these guys. So are we to assume then that the running back is a Bieniemy guy? You know?
Maybe.
Maybe a free agent to be will be a Bieniemy guy.
Who knows? Mm-hmm. It just, I don't know if it's good or bad. I just know that I'm like, huh, maybe he is trying to put the band back together.
I think it's good. I think it's good. Look, I've been the guy saying for years, they need a coach with a freaking vision, and then they need to draft players that those guys are going to use. And not just because they're going to use, but because they're going to teach them. You know? I don't want a GM that's grabbing his guys and then saying, here, you coach him. Good luck.
I agree. I would rather it lean towards the coach. And you could make an argument, too, that Trapillo is a Poles guy because of the connection with BC and his dad and all of this stuff.
You know, I've done it when talking about the left tackle of like, well, I think Poles is going to win that one and have Braxton and Amagaji as his guys. But I don't... You know,
well, maybe his guy will be over there. He'll just be Darnell Wright.
It could be. And this new guy. But like, this is alignment is supposed to be them truly collaborating and discussing. And when in doubt, lean towards the coach's vision for the most part. And I that's cool. Like, I don't know that we need to make it diametric. Like, this was Ben's draft or this was Pohl's draft. It's hard. It's hard not to do that in our business, but I don't know that that's fair entirely.
But here's my thing. I think that Poles deserves credit for allowing it to be Ben's draft. That saying, you're the head coach, you tell me what you want. Because I don't think that there was the same level of respect for Kraft and or acumen or caring when it comes to what Matt Eberflus and his staff thought about players. I think that Poles was probably, and I think well within his rights, be like, you know what? We got this part. We got some really smart people up here. We'll bring you those guys. You coach them up. Like, these are the players that we think fit. And that didn't work. I like the idea of the head coach saying, this is what I'm looking for.
Yeah, man, so do I.
And if it's a tie...
Go to the coach. Go to the coach. I mean, we talk about it in baseball terms. We talk about whoever they're developing needs to be coached the same way once he gets to the big league club. I mean, these are the guys. Like you mentioned, Rauschard being able to help that big tackle, Trapillo, do some bending and because he's good at that stuff. Good. I want that kind of synergy. The best orgs have that. This is year one, but if they're leaning in to giving themselves that kind of synergy in the first go of a draft here, I'm good with it. I think it's overdue, if anything.
So let's get into this. Let's hear from Ben. Ben Johnson, he talked about Loveland, and basically he said, look, this guy is an avatar for a player that you've seen be a problem for the Bears to defend.
Really, with Colson, it starts with the person more so than the player. Listening, and I love the tape. I love everything about the tape. But when you get to know him as a man, it's really intriguing. It's who we want to be going forward, in my opinion. He stands for high football character, IQ, intelligence, but he's a great teammate. When we went to the University of Michigan, everybody was raving about him to see how he conducted himself, not only amongst his teammates, but walking through the building and interacting with equipment staff and video staff. You could tell that he was so well respected. His story is a little bit unique, you know, coming from small town Idaho and yet going to the big stage like he did. He didn't bat an eye. And so, I do see a lot of comparisons to Laporta, but that's not just on the field. That was off the field as well, because with Laporta, the stage was never too big or too bright. I felt that same thing with Colston the first time I met him. He doesn't bat an eye. He performs at a high level. And as we talk about where we're going as an organization, and we're going to be playing in these big games with the bright lights, we need guys that are going to rise up to the occasion, and he's going to do that for us.
Love the stuff about football character and what he thinks from having met the guy and going to work out with him. I suspect, though, your issue is more with the specific player profile and the putting the pegs in the correct hole.
And I don't think it's wrong. I just think that we're seeing, like, a bunch of it. And you're like, oh, okay. I thought that we were just going to see how things went. But – if the whole reason that you hired Ben Johnson was because you wanted a recreation of the success that he had in Detroit, let him go look for it. The problem is if you go look for it without it being authentic, without it actually being you going, oh my God, like now that I think about it, he is a lot like Sam LaPorta. It's what you're talking about, the concept of confirmation bias. Are you seeing what you want to see?
There's a broader point that I want to make to push back on this, but I think we should continue talking about it because it kept going. So you, like Luther Burden is the next one that comes up here. When they draft Burden, I'm like, oh, there's their Jameson Williams. Now, Jameson Williams, crazy speed, and Burden doesn't have quite that amount of speed in terms of it being specifically measured, but he's an explosive ball carrier. And I and others are not the only ones to say the Jameson Williams name in regards to him.
Yeah, that's something that Ben brought up when he talked about the weapons and their concept. And we got a little bit more on Burden that we'll get to in a little bit. But this is Ben talking about the weapons and the fact that he wants competition and he wants this thing to raise up. And just listen very closely, because I think it'll give you a window into what was going on here before.
Listen, we talked about it. The moment the players got back into the building, call it 3 weeks ago now, it was going to be a competitive environment. There is no depth chart right now. If you want to play, you got to go earn it. If you want a role, you got to go earn it. They know that. So we were very straightforward and honest with them when they came into the building. I think all we did this weekend was we might have just turned up the notch just a couple of dials for certain people in the building. So that's a good thing. That's a healthy thing. That's where you bring out the best, not only in your team, but in each individual. So what I'm going to be curious to see is what guys look like when the ball's not in their hands on offense. Okay. Yeah, you're right. We have a lot of weapons. And so how are you going to run your route when you might not be number one in the progression? Okay. How are you going to block for your teammate when he has the ball? Because if you do those things right, then as a coaching staff, we're going to want to get you the ball a little bit more. So it all ties together. It all goes hand in hand. And that's the beauty behind it.
Listening to Ben talk about the competition he wants to build here. I know you're always looking for competitiveness when you're looking for players. I'm sure. But was there anything different this year doing it with Ben, working with DA, and the type of traits that they want when it comes to the kind of having that edge, that fire, that competitiveness you've talked about? Or was that, I mean, again, I know you always look for it, but it was just a little bit different when you want to match what Ben's looking for here.
Every coach wants guys that have, you know, high level of competes and all that. But I think anytime it's something you revisit every year, like what are we looking to accomplish? What do we want on our football team? If that's from a scheme standpoint or the type of player or what traits that they're bringing, that's something we'll go back to every single year to make sure that, all right, these positions have this, because that's how we want to approach this upcoming year and build a roster. So we always want to be aligned with those things that we look for in terms of traits and makeup.
Right there, all I was like was, okay, Ryan, yeah, that's great. Let's get back to Ben. Because I can't get enough of Ben voicing what his vision is for how this team's gonna fight and compete with each other. And like, no block, no rock. We talked about it in terms of wide receivers a long, long time ago with this particular offense.
Which is interesting, considering their second round draft pick.
Yes, it is.
So I ran across this morning. James Palmer and Steve Smith do this. Steve Smith, the wide receiver. They do a podcast together. It's really good. Hopefully we can get James on the show this week, because he had some incredible intel that our buddy Alex Kuhn was able to kind of say, yeah, that actually kind of tracks with what you know about it.
I wasn't familiar with this show, and you sent it, and we're going to play a clip from a little ways in, but I watched the whole thing, and it's really, really good.
Yeah, and having Steve Smith break down wide receivers I always think is good, but keep in mind what Ben said about what you do without the ball will play a role in whether or not you get the ball when you hear Steve Smith's scout on Luther Burden III.
If he doesn't get the ball when he believes he should, becomes unfocused.
Okay.
Explosive with the ball in his hands. You get a lot of usage out of him. At times, they seem to force the ball to him. This is the criticism right now.
Okay.
against bigger and physical teams didn't answer the bell with the same energy.
When we look at all this, Steven, obviously these guys are moldable, right? This is a work in progress. You say that all the time.
You hope some are.
Yes, you hope you are. And obviously the more moldable the player is, the more coachable he is, the more you want him in your room.
Yes, sir.
If you're the position coach specifically, certain traits are correctable. Certain traits are correctable by the individual.
Correct.
Because it's a lot of want to.
You have to be willing to change, desire to change. You also got to be able to look in the mirror. Right. And know, True. You know, hey, I'm speaking from experience. You got to look at who's the common denominator. It can't always be. Right.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you used to hear, man, Miss Susie don't like me. She failed me.
Yeah.
But Mr. Lovin', I got an A. So Miss Susie failed me. But when you get an A, it's me. When you fail, it's her. Right. And so that's I don't know him. I have never met him. I haven't had a discussion with him. Haven't had a conversation with him. He may want or want not have a conversation with me based off this evaluation. You know, Either way, don't matter.
That was Steve Smith Sr. with James Palmer on their podcast talking about new Bears wide receivers. So that's interesting to me. And maybe that's Ben saying, hey, man, we picked you, but I hope you understand the way that you're going to get touches is by you doing all of the little things correctly and you being a good teammate while the game is going on.
He apparently has had way too many times where he doesn't run routes with purpose. He's had too many times where the way he moves, like Steve said, without the ball is not the way he moves with the ball.
He's fantastic with the ball.
Dude, with the ball, you know what he reminds me of? He reminds me of when young Odell Beckham Jr. showed up, and it was like, look at the way that guy runs. Like, he just ate a star in Super Mario Brothers. Like, he's just explosive.
The soccer player in Odell Beckham Jr. would come out all the time where you see him kind of get small in some of these spaces to break through and... Then when he had his speed,
there was nothing like it. This kid shows flashes of it. They say he's the best yards after catch receiver in this draft. But if he doesn't bust his hump the other times, he's not going to play. So Ben is talking to him as much as he's talking to others, like subtweeting DJ Moore, like some texters are saying, or whatever. So I kind of love that Luther Burden comes in here not handed a full-time job.
But you would expect someone who is a second-round pick to have one. And if he doesn't, then that's a problem. Because if you're taking a receiver in the second round when you already have a multi-year receiver locked up on a big-money deal and a first-round, top-10 pick out there wide receiver, and you take a second receiver or third receiver in the second round, that guy's supposed to play.
I hear you, but Zacchaeus can play too. He played a bunch for Washington last year. I think they're going to make this kid earn it, and I'm cool with that. All right, so here's the broader point I wanted to make, okay, about Ben getting all these Lions guys and it feeling a little too on the nose in terms of the replication. He's still going to break this thing down to the studs and build it back up based on the strengths they have. Because of the quarterback. And this is what I'm going to expect. That's going to be the difference. He doesn't have Jared Goff. And asking Caleb to be Jared Goff, if he's saying this kid is Loveland, or Loveland is Laporta, and this kid is Jameson Williams, you're destined to fail if you're going to ask Caleb to be full-on Jared Goff. He's going to ask him to do some of that.
I disagree with that.
Well, but he's going to ask Caleb to do some of that.
I think if you ask him to be Jared Goff, knowing that in the moments when he doesn't have to be, the moments where Caleb can be Caleb, when a play breaks down, when the pocket collapses, and then there's all of that special stuff, I think if Caleb puts up the type of numbers that Goff has put up over the last three seasons, the Bears are going to be in a position to be a playoff team.
Oh, no, I'm not disputing that. What I'm saying is from his design and his utilization here, he's going to have to look at Caleb and say, you know what? Caleb's not ready for this kind of shallow cross constantly as much as Jared was.
But he also has to get to that. And that's one of the points that Ben has made about Caleb, too, is that we are going to work together. We're going to start and we're going to build this thing up. But I don't think that he's going to overload him. I think that he's going to make it the simplest form of it. And like Burden, there will be Caleb earning the next part of it. But if he can go back there and play point guard the way that Jared Goff has played point guard for the Lions, the Bears are in great shape. And then when we need you to be Superman.
For sure.
In the moments when you have to do it, then do it. But the idea would still be like, this is the template. We'll figure out how we want you specifically to do it. Because I think Caleb's got a stronger arm than Goff.
Well, this is what I'm saying. As he's designing, you know, the play sheet, and he's using everything that's in his playbook and deciding what the first 15 are going to be and what the game plan is going to be, he needs to, and I think will, fit it to what Caleb is good at and ready for on a weekly basis. And that is going to be an opportunity for the difference. That's the opportunity, is that the most important guy on the offense is going to dictate what he uses all these guys for schematically on a given week.
But last year, I would say the things that we saw Caleb be really good at are not sustainable in the NFL. I think that the stuff that Goff does with a – it's like saying, we're going to do all of this stuff, but we've got a better version of the person who's doing it.
Well, ideally, because if a prey breaks down, then this guy will take it next level.
And again, like the arm strength thing, I do think that Caleb has a stronger arm. There would probably be somebody who would argue with me on that, but I think that he's got a stronger arm. But what were the things that we were saying about Caleb? Like, hey, take the layup. Hey, take the free cheese. It's all out there. And then if he can find some consistency, even though he's got the stronger arm, I don't think he has the level of touch that Goff had on some of the deep balls. If he finds consistency there and you're playing in a style that is similar but not the same,
right,
I think it can be successful.
For sure. For sure. And he doesn't have the same feet in rhythm in the pocket that Goff has. And he's going to have to learn that stuff. I'm just speaking to your and other people's fears of like, oh, he's just trying to do the Detroit thing and put a Detroit guy in there. He's trying to give himself the tools he needs to call all the things he can call. But now comes the fun that he has discussed before of actually putting together what works for the people involved. And his quarterback is the number one concern.
And we know that Caleb's already been putting in the work, getting used to taking the ball from under center, getting used to what play action movement looks like in use the rhythm of, oh, now I've hit my back foot, the ball should probably come out now.
Yeah.
You know, all of that stuff. It's great to see. But of all of the character, like the this guy is this guy, if at the end of it you get a Caleb Williams version of Jared Goff, sign me up.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be all right with that.
Damn right.
That would make a lot of sense.
Later on this hour, I want to talk about the huge upside of one player in this draft that I'm excited about, that I think fans should be excited about, too. We'll do it later on in the hour.
When we come back, though, there was a lot of fun over at Wrigley Field, you know, until the end. There's a lot of fun going on. And then there was a bad couple of calls behind the plate, and then things got away from the Cubs.
Third base still an issue.
Third base is an issue, and they're going to have to do some things to try and figure all of that stuff out. We'll check in on the Cubs being on the national stage next on The Score.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy, and no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Just to be clear, like, we love fun.
Afternoons on The Score.
0-1. Back up to Mel Romano's able to glove it. Underhand to end it. The Phillies will win it. They'll take this series. The final score here on a Sunday night, 3-1 in 10.
I still love the Baseball Tonight music. Used to get me through a lot of hard nights in college.
Should be where Carl Ravich is best remembered, one would think. Ravi doing that with Peter Gammons as the reigning king of baseball conversation there, and then they started to add players and expanded even more. So yeah, I think about it. Does sound like the Baseball Tonight vibe. Do they also use that for Sunday Night Baseball? I think so.
Well, it's
because I thought of John Miller first by just like my knee jerk reaction.
It's the 8-bit nature of how it sounds that makes you nostalgic. Like kind of how when they brought back the NHL and they brought back the NHL on ESPN Music, and you're like, oh, that takes me to a place right there.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day.
Yeah. What do you think of that broadcast these days? Last night, there it was. I think it's better than it was when Vasgersian was there.
I didn't like A-Rod in the role that he was in.
Yes.
I liked A-Rod because there were so many players who loved talking to him.
I hate you.
I enjoyed when he would talk ball. Like, it was doing less personality and more real baseball stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because hearing him talk about it was great. Like, you learn stuff from him. I was kind of like, whatever. Like, the broadcast is, I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other on it.
I think it's better. I like Eduardo Perez a lot.
Me too.
I think David Cohn is fine. I think Carl Ravitch could stand to set up his two analysts a little bit more. And I say that as a guy who every chance I get to do play-by-play, I tend to talk a little bit too much and really just need to let the analyst do the work, which is a learning curve for everybody and anybody. And Carl obviously came to it later in his career. So it's understandable because he's capable of so much more. But anyway, there the Cubs were for the second time in 3 weeks last night on Sunday Night Baseball. And the guy who's mic'd up last night is having a glow up nationally. Pete Crow Armstrong and Mark DeRosa did a thing on MLB Network last week. It's really good. DeRosa breaking down PCA's swing a little bit.
We got to get D-Row on the show.
Couldn't agree more.
Because he's back to being the manager of Team USA.
Yes, sir.
And he's fun. He's a lot of fun.
So he talked about PCA, and PCA was on that show and was great. And then, like, he's rising up in war, as you've been pointing out. He's also the number one most searched player on Fangraphs.
I didn't know that.
Over the last 10 days, I think it is.
It's probably just because of my searches. Just to see where he is in the daily war rankings.
Well, I think him climbing has a lot of people around the league and fans going, what? Huh? How's he? What?
What?
Who? Yeah.
What?
Exactly. Chuck is searching the hell out of PCA over on Fangraphs. And then this thing last night with him mic'd up for an inning was awesome.
We're back, and you can see it on the screen. You can ask Pete Crow Armstrong a question using the hashtag AskSNB. He's wearing a microphone in center. What was the reception like after the double and the RBI out there?
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
We love early game wins like that, being able to take that as some momentum. And there's really nothing better than going back to the third base dugout and seeing people stand on their feet and all that, and it's great.
Yeah, you've had a lot of that. I mean, how much fun are you having? And that's different than competing and winning. I'm talking about, like, real fun.
Well, winning aside, competing is about as fun as it gets. If you go lace them up and be ready to play nine innings every day and show up for your teammates.
Yeah.
That's the most fun part, but it's definitely easy to take that when you're winning ball games and the lineup's banging. But I've had arguably the most fun I've ever had playing baseball in my career this year so far.
This year, yeah.
Hey, PCA, give it to me straight, man. When you hit that ball, what did you think? Come on now.
I definitely thought I got it. I definitely thought I got that one.
Yeah, you got to... That ball smoked to left field.
Oh, we got a guy.
Yeah, you do. You got a guy out there. Dang it, huh? Yeah, maybe you got to reduce the tell a little bit, because I think it's Eduardo... When you hit it, the right hand went up.
Yes, it did. That was halfway because of the dismount. That was just that was somewhat natural, but I definitely kept it up a second longer than I wish I did.
Okay.
I really thought it was great last night. That's courtesy of ESPN. I really felt like it's different when players want to do that segment versus, all right, whatever, I'll take – however much money ESPN is going to give me to do this, because they do get paid for that. Like, it's just, he enjoyed it. And he's that type of dude. Like, you saw when the team went to Japan, that whatever the Cubs social media team needed, PCA was like, I'll do it. Whatever type of outreach they wanted to do, he and Justin Turner would jump in front of cameras and do wacky stuff. And and he seemingly had a good time. So I was glad to see him in that moment kind of enjoy it, because that can be annoying. You're trying to do your job, and you're also trying to do an interview.
Yeah, man, he took to it. He took to it. He was comfortable. And then some stuff happened, like just the hardcore baseball of it. And you can find the whole segment online. But like, there's a moment where a double goes over Kyle Tucker's head, and instead it's a triple. Bryson Stott turns it into a triple. And PCA, you hear him like huffing and puffing and screaming, third, third, during that. There's a moment where he makes a signal to Nico Horner, and they asked him about it, and he says, yeah, I was just telling him that I've got everything that's in front of me. And he talked about where he positions in center field, because he plays more shallow at Wrigley than other places because he knows it well. And we'll have a whole season to talk about his defensive genius. And there was also just this moment where he was asked about Miguel Amaya's success, which was really, really cool because they go back. And he also gave you a little window into what life is like for Miguel Amaya as well.
All right, here's Harper, 0-1. Runner goes, and a throw down.
Good throw, Miggy. Good throw, Miggy!
That's as fast as I've seen a catch and throw behind the plate, and as fast as I've seen Turner around and get back to the dugout. Give me your vantage point there.
If Trey Turner knows he's out, that must have been a pretty good throw. No, Miggy is developing into such a good baseball player. He's been called on to do a lot of different things over the last 2 years, and he's just handled the pitching staff really well. And he's one of, you know, very few Latin guys we got on this roster, and he that is in no effect in his daily routine and how he just goes about his business in the clubhouse and interacting with all of us. He's a really good friend of mine after you know, being with him for about 4 years now, and I've loved seeing him develop on the baseball field.
How about the comfort in talking about all of that? Because that's the realness of a baseball clubhouse.
Absolutely.
Latin guys sometimes stick together. They don't have many on this Cubs team among the position players, but like Miggy is an active part of all the conversations and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, PCA is very comfortable giving you real talk in that atmosphere.
Giving you real talk about it and kind of walking you through what the game is like, what the clubhouse is like. Like, I thought it was cool. And he sometimes, like, you'll hear guys that are mic'd up and they seem like annoyed, you know, like they're like, you know, whatever, I'm, you know, bearing down for this next pitch. Outfielders are probably easier than infielders, but even Nico Horner, I thought, was pretty good when he was mic'd up on it. It all played, I thought. I was surprised, and then you have to go back and remember how old how young PCA is when he was asked about the player that he looked up to.
I had so many people, but I'd say Cuts just because we're probably short for time. I really got put on to Andrew McCutchen around his MVP years.
Right,
he was
one
the
more
man.
Question for you, because people, you know, little big league, your mom was in. When was the first time you saw it, and is that your favorite baseball movie? If not, what is?
Yes, it is my favorite baseball movie.
Has to be.
My mom did a great job. And it was pretty cool getting to be in a movie with Griffey and Randy Johnson and
right.
so on. But I'd say The Natural is probably my other favorite, or Major League.
When's the first time you watched Little Big League?
Couldn't tell you.
you
I was young
to.
For sure. They
you
didn't. They
going.
Didn't push it on me though. They didn't push it on me.
You
that
keep
was,
going, Pete. Thanks, buddy.
I will. Thanks, guys.
See you.
Bye.
And like they had a natural. They made a reference to The Natural last night on the broadcast because there was that moment where the sun is coming through the grandstand and shining like right at the first baseman. And it's very reminiscent of when Glenn Close gets up in The Natural.
Mm-hmm.
But for PCA, when he had talked about Andrew McCutchen, and I'm like, oh, yeah, when PCA was that age, right? When he was the age where all of us have, like, our baseball awakening, Andrew McCutchen was finishing in the top five every year for MVP
badass.
And won one of them.
Absolute badass is McCutchen. Yeah, no, that's true. Like, PCA has a friendship with Ken Griffey, that has been forged at the Futures game first and then in Tokyo, and then they've continued talking and they have phone conversations and stuff, but that's like, that's a generation removed for Pete Crow Armstrong.
But that's cool though, and maybe that connection is like your parents, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you were in a movie with my mom.
Right. So that's a fun icebreaker if you're going to talk to one of the legends of the game, like to have that as your and then you say, all right, let me see if there's some stuff that I can pattern. And he has the athleticism to pattern himself after vintage Kutch and King, quite honestly, vintage King Griffey Jr. as a defender.
You upset that I've never seen Little Big League? Like you're upset that I haven't seen Predator? How Predator, you feel about that?
The Predator thing is striking.
How about Angels in the Outfield? Never saw that one either.
Really?
Yeah. Skipped a generation. Or at least I skipped a generation.
But I figure like there wasn't a day on like TNT or you were just looking for something on MLB Network because it's always running on MLB Network.
Ferris Bueller's Day Off running a lot on MLB Network. That's a stretch.
That is stretchy. Look up right there.
Ruben is in the wheelhouse for Little Big League, I think. He's right around the same age as the boy when he took over the Minnesota Twins was during that movie. And it's like, it's not as cutesy as Rookie of the Year. It's more baseball-y, right? Lawrence, is that a correct assessment?
Yes.
You think?
Holds so
I think you would.
Bit.
I think you would dig it, yeah.
Okay. All right, I'll take that under advisement. Da Vinci Code is the next one for he and I. A little too adult. What do we think?
And as I always say when we talk about baseball movies, High and Outside.
You do say High and Outside a lot.
That movie is dark. It is baseball noir, and it's great. You're going to love it.
But not for the boy, though, right?
No, he's a little too young.
Yeah.
I say after the bar mitzvah.
I thought of you because there's an episode of Black Mirror I really want to show him from this season.
Was it episode 4?
Yeah, did you watch it?
I watched it Saturday.
And he's
amazing.
Amazing, right?
I'm not sure what to think of it, though. Like, I was like, oh, yeah. And then I was like, yeah.
Exactly. And Ruben's such a gamer that I think he'd connect. But it ends really, you know, it's sci-fi. Things don't go well sometimes.
Or they went better than expected. Like, that's where you're stuck at the end of that episode, where you go, maybe the world's great.
Yeah, but to pull me back from the spoiler issue, possible spoiler issue.
Maybe not.
All right, we'll discuss.
All right, when we come back, there is more stuff for us to discuss on the side of the draft. Spiegs is in love with one of the players that got drafted. It's not Colston Loveland because he thought it would be Tyler Warren. But there's another player that he really likes. I think he might be right about this. We'll share next on The Score.
Still trying to wrap my head around it, but I'm excited. Like I said, like it's a crazy, surreal moment. And you know, once I step foot and touch down in Chicago, I'm going to meet those guys and we're going to get to work and it's going to be fun.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
That is one of the Bears' new running backs, Kyle Manongai. For now, he is a Bears running back because let's remember he is a 7th round pick.
What is that? What is that immediate caveat? Think he's not going to make the team?
Usually those guys get cut.
Isaiah Pacheco didn't get cut.
He did not.
That's a 7th rounder.
From
Rutgers. Yeah. Terrell Davis was a 6th rounder. Arian Foster was undrafted. Aaron Jones was a 5th rounder.
I disagree with Arian Foster being undrafted. I saw a movie that said otherwise.
Like, there's the 7th round, they happen. Julian Edelman, Marcus Colston, Shannon Sharp. Like, sometimes there's dudes who don't have the speed.
Skip.
Who actually do end up having the football skills. Shannon Sharp might go number one in a released text exchange draft. It's a deep pool, though. There's a lot of people
all
in
of
there.
Us. All of us have been there.
Well, I mean, in some ways.
Maybe not there, though, because that's a lot.
That's it is a lot.
But we don't kink shame on this show.
I hadn't gone that far down the running back scouting list in detail. Like, I didn't do a deep dive on Kyle Manongai before the draft. I'll hold up a hand on that, point of thumb. But now I have.
And?
I really, really like this pick, man.
Why?
Because DeAndre Swift is here, and they're going to use him. He will be Sonic for, you know, not as good as Gibbs, but he's the speed guy, right? They needed Knuckles. They needed a David Montgomery.
So wait, are you saying that you have to build the roster while looking at the Detroit players and then finding the avatar on the Bears roster?
I would like everybody to rewind for full conversation on the Odyssey app to the 3 o'clock top of the hour segment. This guy fits what they need in that backfield. Powerful runner. Dudes bounce off him. He's a one-cut guy, really good for inside zone. Good nose for short yardage, patient, decisive. He's one of those guys that always falls forward and finishes his run. And he wears teams down, you know? I mean, 1,200 yards 2 years in a row for Rutgers, never fumbled once. No drops as a receiver out of the backfield. 707 touches with no fumbles. Two-time team captain for that guy. And by the way, same 40 time as Montgomery, 4.62 to 4.60. And Montgomery's one of those guys whose game speed is faster.
Agreed.
And I think this is a guy whose game speed is faster. So, look, his top sprint speed at the combine was actually pretty good. And this is, I love the way he runs. He's got, we've talked about it a lot, man. You need somebody with a nose for short yardage and somebody who like falls forward and is patient and smart in tight space. This kid is that in a way that DeAndre Swift absolutely is not. I could see this kid getting utilized and getting some run, much like Isaiah Pacheco did as a rookie seventh rounder.
I think you dismiss Swift too much. Like, I know that he wasn't a star for the Bears last year, but I thought when my issue with him is that he doesn't stick with the run enough. Like, he often will freestyle and
bounce
it. Doesn't
follow his blockers, yeah.
But in those moments when he didn't, I thought he did fine. But I agree, they definitely need someone else that's going to help carry the load a little bit back there. I'm interested in this guy. Like, I'm very interested because the contact balance, you see him running away in some cases from defenders. You see him bouncing off defenders.
Uh-huh.
I love that the yards per game went up from the junior year to the senior year, where they were asking him to do a lot there at Rutgers, and he wasn't afraid of the moment. Like, that to me is a good sign.
Absolutely. Now look, they told us this was a deep, deep running back draft, and this kid went in round 7. Devin Neal from Kansas went in round 7. That's another real dude. They were like third and fourth round grades on both of those guys in some ways. But I like him. I think he fits the mix. I think he's got a real shot to be used as an inside guy when Swift is used as an outside guy in combo. But they're not done. There's a report out of Cleveland that Nick Chubb, from Ken Carmen, the sports radio voice in Cleveland, that Nick Chubb is not going to sign with the Browns and is going to sign with an NFC North team.
What if I told you that team was the Lions? They're in the NFC North.
That's true. They've got a couple running backs who play a lot.
They do.
If you're Nick Chubb, isn't it? It's kind of attractive to think about coming to the Bears as possibly being in the mix.
I think it's honestly, I don't think there's, right now, unfortunately for the Bears, I don't think there's a team in the division that it's not attractive to go play for.
But if you're dreaming of being a starter or, like, rebuilding your value as a lead back?
What if you're dreaming of finally winning because of what your career has been and what you've been asked to do?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know Nick Chubb. I don't know his motivations.
I don't know Mike DeCourcy.
I don't know OB. Either. That's an old one. Thank you, Denny. To it, yeah. Thank you, Denny. Right? You don't know OB. But, I mean, they'll probably get some other free agent back, right? I've heard people talk about J.K. Dobbins and then this Chubb rumor. But I like this kid, and I like the possibility of him having an impact and running hard.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that because we actually know someone who covered Rutgers football, strangely enough. Because he covers all of the Big Ten. And he's a lifelong Chicagoan. Mike Hall is going to join us to talk about the Bears draft and their running back from Rutgers. You don't want to miss it. It's next here on The Score.